Now, with the latest from the world of technology, this is the Tech Guide Podcast with Stephen Fenwick.
Lots to talk about.
Tech Guide.
It's a very well-rounded product, combines great design, great technology, lots of excellent features.
Tech Guide.
This is why Samsung has seen a huge surge, why their profits are up.
Keeping you updated and educated, this is the Tech Guide Podcast.
This is not an ultrabook. If you're looking for something small, slim and lightweight, then you need to look elsewhere.
Tech Guide.
Probably one of the most impressive little devices I've seen in quite a while.
Now, from the studios of techguide.com.au, Stephen Fenwick.
Tech Guide, episode 117, the podcast that keeps you updated and educated about the latest consumer technology. It's great to have your company once again, and if you're joining us for the first time, welcome aboard. We hope you enjoy it. I'm Stephen Fenwick, and I'm the editor of techguide.com.au. On this week's show, we talk about how South Sydney Rabbitohs took over Twitter on their way to the NRL Premiership victory. We get the inside word from Twitter's Jonathan Simpson. In the Tech Guide reviews, we take a look at Sharp's 70-inch Quattron television and also the Plantronics Backbeat Pro wireless noise-cancelling headphones. In the Tech Guide interview, we talked to Sledgehammer Games co-founder Michael Condrey after going hands-on with the brand-new Call of Duty Advanced Warfare multiplayer. Great game. In the Tech Guide Help Desk, we'll also talk about how your smartphone is tracking you, why it's doing that, and how you can turn it off. A massive Tech Guide, so let's get cracking. Well, it's been a big weekend for the South Sydney Rabbitohs, and I have to say up front, I'm a massive fan, former player. I've turned Tech Guide red and green. If you haven't visited the site lately, check it out. It is red and green with the South Sydney logo on either side of the homepage. It's got a site takeover happening. And if you can hear my voice from yelling the whole weekend, it's a little bit croakier than usual. But the Rabbitohs created history on the weekend. They won their first premiership in 43 years. Last time they won was in 1971. So when they took out the title against the Bulldogs, it was not only an event at ANZ Stadium and also live on your TV, it was also an event on Twitter. Now, Twitter released some facts about the game and how Twitter, the whole platform, really lit up during, before, during, and after the contest. We will speak to Jono Simpson in a moment from Twitter. He's head of Twitter Australia, sport in Australia for Twitter. But before we do that, I just want to go through some little facts about how Twitter responded to the match. Now, the most tweeted moments were, of course, the full-time siren when Souths win. So there were a lot of people tweeting the fact that it was the first time in 43 years they'd done that. Second most tweeted moment was the final try of the game scored by the fullback Greg Inglis. Third most tweeted moment was the Adam Reynolds try, which was the second last try that really sealed the match for the Rabbitohs. And lastly, the fourth most tweeted moment was a sickening head clash between James Graham, the Bulldogs forward, and Dave Tyrrell, the South Sydney front rower. Dave Tyrrell unfortunately contacted. They had a head clash. Dave Tyrrell was knocked unconscious and had to be carried off the ground in a medicab. The most mentioned players in the game, well, it comes as no surprise that the most mentioned player in the match was Sam Burgess, the courageous South Sydney forward who broke his cheekbone in the very first tackle of the game and continued for the full match and won the Clive Churchill Medal for Man of the Match of the Grand Final. So, courageous effort with echoes of John Sattler in the 1970 Grand Final playing 77 minutes of that match with a broken jaw. So, the 21st century version of that was Sam Burgess carrying on with a broken cheekbone. Second most mentioned player was Greg Inglis. Third most mentioned player was George Burgess, who also scored an amazing try to take South to 12-6. He beat a few players in defence and dived over the line under the posts. Now, the most used hashtags, hashtag NRL GF was the most used, second most NRL Grand Final. That's Grand Final spelt out. Third most was hashtag Go Rabbitohs. Now, just on the mention of that, Souths even won the hashtag battle. Each team were putting forward their very own hashtags. In Souths' case, it was hashtag Go Rabbitohs. And in the Canterbury Bulldogs' case, it was hashtag Unleash, as in unleash the Bulldogs, who let the dogs out, and all that sort of stuff. Well, South Sydney won that battle as well. 78% of tweets had the hashtag Go Rabbitohs, 22% of tweets had Unleash. So not only was South Sydney well-backed online, on Twitter, they also had many more supporters at the ground as well. Now, we had a chat to Twitter Australia's head of sport, Jonathan Simpson, a little earlier, and he gave us a little inside word on how the Twitter platform was used during the grand final. Here's what he had to say earlier. Well, hi, Jono. Thanks for joining me. You're just about to jet out to San Francisco, so I appreciate the time this morning. We're here to talk. Thanks, mate. We're here to talk all about, obviously, Twitter and how it exploded during the NRL grand final. Can you give us an update?
It was a big night last night, an exciting game, a historic win. I'm sure you're very excited about that, no doubt. We saw, you know, huge amounts of people on the platform. Obviously, it helps when there's live TV coverage. You know, TV and Twitter go hand in hand, and live sport on TV and Twitter always goes off. So we're always excited when there's major sporting events on television, and everybody wants to get involved with Twitter. And, you know, the likes of my favourite tweet actually just came through this morning was from Kathy Freeman. She had a photo with Greg Inglis and the Premiership trophy in the change rooms, and she just tweeted about, it was actually last night, says, "What a night, the best sporting moment of my life, so proud of the Rabbitohs."
Wow.
And to see Kathy Freeman tweet that, having won an Olympic gold medal,
yeah,
that shows how amazing the NRL Grand Final was.
Unbelievable.
She has a great relationship with the players and the team. And for me as a fan, just to see that sort of inside access, and that's what we often talk about at Twitter, is that connecting the fans to the inner sanctum and making them feel closer to their team and their players.
Yeah.
And that tweet just personified that. It was perfect because it was inside the change room.
Absolutely.
It was a photo of Kathy with the players, with the trophy that no one else had access to.
Yeah.
And we saw that out on Twitter. So that was the highlight for me, as well as the NRL and the Bulldogs and the Rabbitohs all putting out amazing content last night.
Yeah.
So I could sit at home, watch on television, or if I was at the pub, or if I was on public transport, I could still feel connected to the game.
Sure.
And they took me there. It was my photos and videos and live scores and stats.
Yeah.
So that's where we think Twitter and sport go hand in hand.
Absolutely. And in terms of the volume of traffic, I'm sure there was plenty heading out there. I think I probably accounted for half of it, mate. I think I tweeted out about the Rabbitohs many times during the game. But I was really interested to see that the hashtag battle, it was really a one-sided contest there. Tell us about that.
It really was. So the Go Rabbitohs hashtag outperformed, I guess, the Bulldogs hashtag, which was Unleash, about sort of 80-20, I guess. And
yeah,
understandable once they won the match. Obviously, their fans went on to celebrate long and hard into the night, as I'm sure you did. And I think, you know, the ability for fans to use that hashtag to show their support, and then for people to connect via that hashtag, is where I think the beauty lies.
So absolutely.
I can click on that hashtag and then go celebrate with all these random people who are also fans.
Just
like, for me, I often talk about being at a stadium. There's nothing better. We all understand live sport at a stadium is amazing.
Yep.
And when you win an exciting game or a grand final and you turn to the person next to you and you hug them and then you realise it's a complete stranger, that for me is what we can do with Twitter, is you can now start hugging virtually all these strangers because you're using the same hashtag, you're having these conversations, and you're really showing the support for your team. So, yeah, the Rabbitohs fans were out in force last night. And to their defence, the Bulldogs did a wonderful job in defeat. They were ignominious,
yeah,
in defeat.
Very much.
They certainly put out the correct tweets. Their fans appreciated that they were proud to be a Bulldog, I guess. And, you know, obviously it was a fairy tale story from seventh place, I think they were. So they did their fans proud. So it was good to see them on Twitter after.
Absolutely.
Even when they lose, you've got to be there, and you've got to be there with your fans because,
yep,
they're feeling the pain. You need to feel the pain of the club.
Sure. I do love that. That should be your new slogan, Twitter. Give yourself a virtual hug. Virtual hugs for everyone. Love that. So, the hashtag, I just want to touch on that. The hashtag for people who are relatively new to Twitter, and there's more people signing up every day, I'm assuming. How important is that hashtag? A lot of people don't really, they don't get it, the hashtag, why they need it. It kind of gives everything a tweet a context, doesn't it?
It does. It gives it context, gives you also, well, we often use the phrase that's like the campfire. So it's actually huddling around the campfire, like you did in the old days, or you still do now when you go camping, and it brings everybody together. So it's sort of the fulcrum that allows the conversation around the similar sort of topic. So if you use that, your tweets will be part of that campfire chat, and you can then go and interact with other people who are also sitting around that campfire utilising the same hashtag. So it brings people together who are interested in the same things, which you can then start following those people because you have something in common, sure. Whether it's the club, the players, other fans out there. So I think, for me, that's what a hashtag does. It really just congregates the conversation and brings people closer together.
Okay. And what about, I notice a lot of the players, I know especially the South players who I follow quite closely, they've really embraced Twitter as well. They do really use that as a line to the fans and to everyone out there. That must feel great for you guys at Twitter, knowing that all these superstars and other celebrities have really embraced the whole platform.
Yeah, I mean, I'm so excited about how Australian athletes have really braced Twitter over the last few years. And I think they understand that it's the perfect conduit between them and the fan. So it provides them to be able to connect one-on-one with a fan, also within this larger, they talk about that campfire setting within a larger setting. But it's a really simple, effective way for athletes to connect with fans, to connect with people who are interested in what they do, both as a professional athlete but as a person. And I often talk to athletes about when they're on Twitter and they're utilising Twitter to definitely talk about their life as an athlete, what their training regime is, you know, how often they're sleeping, you know, what happened at the club today using photos and videos, but also to make sure they talk about life outside of football.
Sure.
One of my favourite athletes is Rory McIlroy at the moment. He does a great job.
The golfer, yeah.
He's really killing it. And the thing I really like about Rory and a couple of the other golfers is they don't just talk about golf. And I'm a weekend hack. I would love to be able to play better golf. So sometimes when he keeps talking about golf, it just reminds me how bad a golfer I am. But then when he talks about when he's watching the tennis or he's watching, Australian, he wouldn't be watching Australian Idol, but the equivalent of Australian Idol.
Yep.
I'm sitting on the couch doing exactly the same thing. And I go, hang on, one of the greatest golfers in the world is doing exactly what I'm doing now. We're going to have a conversation about it. And so it brings fans and athletes a little bit closer together. And
fantastic.
Obviously then also athletes can leverage their followers to build up their sponsorships and their brand around that as well.
So absolutely.
And I work with a lot of athletes to make sure that they're utilising that huge base that they've actually formed on Twitter, an engaged audience that brands want to get their hands on. And so the ability to actually then do that subtly and integrate sponsorship messages into their lifestyle is a really effective opportunity for them to start making money on the platform.
Terrific. Jono, thank you for your time, mate. Jonathan Simpson, the sports guy at Twitter Australia. Appreciate your time, mate. Have a safe trip and we'll talk to you soon. Thanks again.
Thank you so much. Go Rabbitohs.
Tech Guide.
Now, a Tech Guide review with Stephen Fennett.
Tech Guide.
Alrighty, we're jumping straight into the Tech Guide reviews now, and our first product that we're going to chat about is a 70-inch Quatron Pro 3D LED smart TV. It is quite a mouthful. It is a large television, a 70-inch model, as a matter of fact, and I love a big TV. It's go big or go home, I say, with the televisions. And this 70-inch TV is very impressive from Sharp. It's got 3D LED backlighting, but the really big screens. It's part of the new range, the larger screen range. So they've got a 60-inch, they've got a 70-inch, and an 80-inch model. This was the middle one that we reviewed here at Tech Guide, 70 inches. The model number, for those who want to know, is LC70LE960X. And don't worry if you can't remember that. You can go to my review on Tech Guide and you can see that for yourself. But we gave this a road test. The 70-inch is very nicely designed, very sleek, narrow or in narrow bezels framing the picture, so hardly any bezel, as a matter of fact, sitting along a nice curved silver stand, a nice polished silver colour. And the thing with this with Sharp, and in fact all this new Quatron Pro range, is the addition of a fourth fourth pixel. We should explain that up front. The Quatron suggests, well, you've got a quad, which means four there. Quatron means the TV has a fourth subpixel. Now, traditionally, a TV normally has red, green, and blue pixels. Well, in Sharp's case, they've added a fourth yellow pixel. So that's where the name Quatron comes from. So what they claim that does is adds a bit more vibrant color to the picture. And I have to say, the picture quality was excellent. But I found it really strange that a 70-inch TV of this kind, which is Quatron Pro and priced at $4,999, wasn't a 4K or Ultra HD television. Now, Sharp's marketing this TV with their Quatron technology to say that it's 4K ready. Now, this has got a full HD resolution of 1920 by 1080. So what Sharp is suggesting that if and when the 4K content arrives, this TV can handle it. And that fourth pixel, that yellow pixel, will come into play to do that. So it'll handle the signal. My question was, why don't they just go 4K to begin with? I think it's not a matter of keeping the price down, because at $5,000 you can buy a similar size TV that is 4K, or as ultra manufacturers call it, ultra high definition. And that's four times the resolution of high definition. And that resolution at 4K and UHD is 3840 by 2160. Not the case with the Sharp. There's a lot of people who maybe don't know, don't care. They might not want a 4K TV. The thing is with 4K is that there isn't, we should be upfront about that, is there's not a lot of content. There's no content, as a matter of fact. The Ultra HD content is very, very scarce and may be so for a few years to come. But if you're going to spend this amount of money and there's all these TVs on the market, I think that it's a good idea to future-proof yourself. So if in 2, 3, 4 years' time, when this content does become more readily available, you'll be able to enjoy it in all its glory with all of those glorious extra pixels to play with. Now, in the Sharp case, it's got 1920 by 1080, so four times less pixels than a 4K TV, but it can handle 4K content nonetheless. So the HDMI connection can handle that. All that extra information can still be displayed on the Sharp screen, but it's not going to be the same resolution as a true 4K TV. It's going to be full high definition. Now, in terms of it upscaling, it can upscale to lower quality content up to full HD, still nowhere near 4K. But in other features, it's got AquaMotion, which is their refresh rate, 200 hertz, so a very smooth picture, especially if you love watching sport or action films, things like that, where there's a lot of fast-moving images. Handle that really, really well. Screen's also THX certified, so that ticks a few boxes for some cinephiles who want a cinema-like experience with their existing TVs. What 4K TVs do, their upscaling tries to take the full HD content and upscales it to near 4K quality. Not quite the same, but the pixels are there to play with. Now, look, you may sound like I don't like this TV. In fact, it's the opposite. I think it's excellent. TV, the picture quality was really nice. The really natural tones, no great color reproduction, impressive black levels as well. Contrast, not the best contrast we've seen, but up there, not far off it. The picture quality was excellent, I've got to say. But just not the same as these competitors, like Samsung, Sony, LG, Panasonic, TCL, Haier, all these other brands moving forward with 4K and UHD. Sharp, in this instance, with this model, with a similar size 70-inch TV, is going hard with full HD. And as I said, there's not a lot of content, not a lot of 4K content around at the moment, so you're not really missing anything. But if those who are comfortable with this and want to spend $4,999, then I can't steer them off it. I think it's got a great picture quality, but we won't know how this TV is going to stack up until there's more 4K content around. If you want to read more that whole review, you can do that at techguide.com.au. Alrighty, our second review is about an audio product, and it's the Plantronics Backbeat Pro. Now, Plantronics is a brand, a company that's been around for quite a long time, decades, as a matter of fact. They've got a huge history with audio technology and developing headsets and headphones. In fact, a bit of trivia here, when Neil Armstrong was became the first man to walk on the moon, and when he uttered that famous line, "One small step for man, one giant leap for mankind," he actually spoke that phrase into a Plantronics headset. So not a bad claim to fame for the company. Well, today they've brought all that signature audio history and technology and performance and put it into one product, the Backbeat Pro noise-canceling headphones. They're wireless noise-canceling headphones, as a matter of fact. Now, it kind of ticks all the boxes for me. No cable, noise cancellation, good audio quality. There's a lot of features on board, really easy to control your music. It's got an NFC on board as well, so you can easily pair your devices, your compatible devices, simply with a touch. The noise cancellation can be flicked on and off, so that once you do flick it on, you do notice that all the outside noises, the ambient noises, are filtered out. It's got a dual microphone, so it senses the noise around you, generates an opposite signal to kill those that ambient noise, so all you hear is your music and the movie that you happen to be watching. Inside each ear cup, 40mm dynamic drivers, and I've got to say the audio quality is excellent, terrific bass, and really nice high mid-level tones. Quite a warm, rich sound. I described it in my review. On the noise cancellation side, it was also very impressive. So all that excess noise dies down in the background, so you can truly hear every single note of the music you're listening to and every part of the film that you happen to be watching. Very popular for when you fly. Now, being wireless, there's no cable to get tangled up in. But unfortunately, when you use these on a plane, there's no facility to have a wireless connection to the movie you're watching on the flight. So it does still come with a cord, so you can actually listen to, you can still use it as a corded set of headphones with the airline adapter, so you can hear your in-flight movies quite comfortably. What I also like about it, and very impressive feature, is the smart features on board, and there's a sensor on board that can actually detect when you're wearing the headphones and when you take them off. So if you're listening to some music, for example, and you take the headphones off your head and maybe rest them around your shoulders, it automatically pauses whatever you're listening to. So then when you put the headphones back on your ears, it also detects that and then resumes, just presses play for you on the music. So it resumes automatically. I think that was a very, very impressive feature. When there's noise cancellation too, there are some times where you need to be able to hear what's going on around you. So you may be listening to music and you need to keep an ear out for your flight announcement, your boarding announcement. There is a pass-through switch on here too, that not only turns off noise cancellation, but also fades back whatever you happen to be listening to, so that you can actually hear maybe a person that wants to talk to you, or you hear your flight announcement or any other announcement or anything else going on around you. So that's really good as well. The headphones also fold down flat into a soft carry case that comes with the headphones. That fold as well, it's handy when you take the headphones off and put them around your neck, rather than the headphones still facing upwards and sort of digging into your neck. You can actually turn them down so they're flat on your chest, so you can actually wear them more comfortably whenever you're walking around. Say you want to board a flight and it's come more comfortable to wear your headphones around your neck, then that's what it can do. So very handy feature as well. On the battery side, this is another impressive feature. But Plantronics is claiming a 60-hour battery life. That's enough battery life to fly around the world twice if you have to. So you don't need to recharge the onboard battery for 60 hours. It also lasts, the charge also lasts a long time. There's like a deep sleep hibernation mode. So the onboard power won't drain away for up to 6 months. So you could charge these headphones, go on a flight, in 5.5 months' time, that charge will still be there ready to go. So you don't have to be charging all the headphones the night before your flight. You want to read the full review? The Plantronics Backbeat Pro wireless noise-canceling headphones, priced at $349. You can read the complete review at techguide.com.au.
Keeping you updated and educated. This is Tech Guide with Stephen Finney.
Tech Guide.
The Tech Guide Help Desk is proudly sponsored by Netgear, Australia's number one Wi-Fi brand. And they've just released the Nighthawk X6 tri-band Wi-Fi router. It's the world's first tri-band router, as a matter of fact, with 802.11ac, the fastest Wi-Fi standard on board. And that's compatible, too, with the iPhone 6 and the iPhone 6 Plus, which have just been released. They, too, have 802.11ac compatibility, and that could be three times faster than the previous model if you are using the Nighthawk X6 with 802.11ac on board. All the latest smartphones now have 802.11ac, including the Galaxy S5, the HTC One, and the LG G3. So it pays to have a Nighthawk X6 if you want to use your device even faster within your home. But you think about the number of devices you have in your home. Is it 5, 10, 20? If you're like me, it's way more than 20. But if you find all these devices aren't performing as fast as they should, then it could be because your wireless traffic is congested and fighting each other for network bandwidth. So the latest router from Netgear eliminates this problem no matter how many people and devices are using your network. The Nighthawk X6 is here, and it's incredible. The X6 delivers a massive combined wireless speed of up to 3.2 gigabits per second. There's never been Wi-Fi like it. Even if everyone and everything in your home is streaming and gaming, working, playing, socializing, or updating all at the same time, the X6 won't miss a beat. So if you're looking for the ultimate in speed, range, and advanced features for your home network, upgrade to the Netgear Nighthawk X6 and get ready for the extreme. Check out the Nighthawk at netgear.com.au/Nighthawk X6.
Tech Guide. Now, a Tech Guide interview.
Tech Guide.
Okay, our Tech Guide interview was with Michael Condrey, who was the co-founder of Sledgehammer Games. Now, their latest production is going to be released on the 4th of November. It is none other than Call of Duty Advanced Warfare. Now, we went hands-on with the multiplayer of that game. Now, just as a bit of background, this is the latest Call of Duty Advanced Warfare. This is the latest in the franchise. It stars none other than Kevin Spacey, two-time Oscar winner in the lead role. Now, the game has a lot of new features, including the multiplayer, that really take the gaming to the next level. And don't forget, this game is designed to work on those latest next-generation high-performing consoles like the PlayStation 4 and the Xbox One. So it really takes the performance and the gameplay and the enjoyment to the next level. Now, by way of background, Call of Duty Advanced Warfare is set in the year 2054, and the world has been torn apart by global terrorist attacks, and governments are in tatters. There's no organized military forces in the world, and so the countries of the world turn to private military corporations to help restore some kind of order to the globe. Now, one of those corporations is Atlas Corporation, headed by Jonathan Irons, and this is the character that's played by Kevin Spacey. Now, you really have to see, and I've embedded these in the Tech Guide story about my hands-on with Advanced Warfare, you really have to see the trailers. There's a reveal trailer. There's also a multiplayer reveal trailer, as well as a campaign trailer on my Tech Guide story, right there amongst the description of the online game. Now, the online performance, there's the major new factor is the fact that your player, your character, now wears an exoskeleton. And what this does, it gives your player more power and more the ability to jump higher, dodge sideways, do things like that, that really add another layer, another dimension to the multiplayer gaming. Now, anyone who's played Call of Duty Online know it's a very competitive platform. There's a lot of people that play Call of Duty Online. And having these sorts of features really sort of adds a whole new level. It has taken it to the next level. It's an excellent addition to the game. And, of course, the maps, the weaponry, the ability to customize your character, to choose different perks and different weapons. You've got a certain budget of points you can use to give your soldier the best possible chance against the enemy. But the Call of Duty multiplayer, I've written about it on Tech Guide, but we got a chance, as I mentioned, to talk to Michael Condrey about the game, about the multiplayer. He was in Australia for the EB Games Expo, and Tech Guide had a chance to sit down and talk to him about the brand new Call of Duty Advanced Warfare. Here's what he had to say earlier. Well, Michael, thanks for joining us on Tech Guide. Wow, I've sat down and played the multiplayer of Call of Duty, and all I've got to say, one word description, wow. Congratulations on an excellent game.
Tell us a little bit about it. 3 years in the making. This seems to be, all stops have been removed. This is going to be the biggest ever.
Thank you, Stephen. Wow, that's great. It's
you
kind
can
of
quote me if you want.
I might have to do that because that's really exactly what we want fans to feel on day one in November. That, like you said, we've had 3 years to really push for innovation. We've poured our hearts and souls into this thing. You know, Sledgehammer Games, the new lead studio for Call of Duty. We saw our chance to make a mark and really innovate. And, you know, from Kevin Spacey and the focus on the narrative and the exoskeleton and the movements that you played... It's a new era for Call of Duty.
Absolutely, and it seems like you've raised the bar yet again. Like you mentioned, Kevin Spacey, yeah. Like two-time Academy Award winning actor. That really, how much credibility does that give the game as a form of entertainment, as well as being a game, of course? But how much credibility does that add?
Well, you know, it's interesting now because you know we really went after Kevin for his ability to perform because you know we were really driven by wanting to tell a really emotional story, a really rich narrative. And so this was before House of Cards really blew up, right? We were looking for an actor who could just deliver on Jonathan Irons, the head of Atlus. And so now with sort of his resurgence as a sort of a pop culture icon, for fans like me, and I think for you, House of Cards season three is coming out this fall, and Kevin Spacey's in our game and his performance is amazing. I think it shows a great coming together of Hollywood and interactive entertainment.
Now, would it be fair to call the game, I'm describing it as a little bit of a reinvention of the game because there's so many added features, the exoskeleton, the storyline has just gone up to another level. Would that be a fair way to describe it?
Yeah, we've called it a new era of Call of Duty, and what we've talked about really, you know, for Sledgehammer Games, it's a new studio, our chance to make a mark. It's a new era for the hardware. I mean, really, for... you know, the first true next-gen Call of Duty development. It's a new era for the fiction. You know, it's 2054 and our version of a near-future conflict with the private military corporation. So, that new era means, you know, we've done everything we can to preserve what makes Call of Duty best in class, and there's so many great things about it. But you've never really played Call of Duty this way before, and like you said, from campaign to co-op to loot and virtual lobby and all the things we brought to multiplayer... we hope to surprise fans in November.
You mentioned there was the pillars of the game, obviously the narrative, the storyline, the gameplay. Take us through them. So this is the storyline. Obviously, is closely guarded secret, I'm assuming, but it is involved. It's got a great actor in the lead. So that was as important as the gameplay.
Yeah, really. For Sledgehammer Games, myself and everybody at the studio, you know, our pedigree is really, you know, that of storytellers and entertainers, and we've done some stuff in the past. As you probably know, we did Dead Space, and that was a really character-driven sort of narrative. And, you know, as I mentioned before, we look at, you know, that the attachment you have to characters in TV today, right? I think of those moments, you know, the Red Wedding and Game of Thrones, where really as a player, if you can become emotionally attached to that narrative and that character, we think we can take you on a journey that you've never seen in Call of Duty before. And so you start as Private Mitchell. He's a new Marine, and he, you know, begins his career in the opening of Seoul. You probably saw the level where he gets pretty traumatically injured, loses his arm, and sort of is able to rejoin the force through the private military organization called Atlus, who Jonathan Irons and Kevin Spacey run. And you get to follow that 10-year story arc, and we think... hopefully by the end, you know, single protagonist and Kevin Spacey as this key figure, we hope that it's pretty rich.
Well, that alone would be enough. But then, of course, there's the gameplay.
Yeah.
Now, you actually get in the driver's seat and you're in there.
Absolutely.
So, and with this game, you've really... The physics engines and all the gameplay that you've added is just really taken it to the next step.
Yeah, thank you for that. It's true. You know, we really focused on changing... how players come to expect, you know, the movement set and the player mechanics in Call of Duty. And, you know, we call this sort of the most radical change in a decade, and I think that's really true. You know, previous games have had, you know, peak and lean and a few other player mechanics, but the advanced soldier and the exoskeleton has brought speed and strength and the ability to boost and dodge and slam. And, you know, all those together have, you know, it's a very intuitive sort of control. It's that gun-on-gun action at 60 frames a second that makes Call of Duty great. But like you saw when you said, wow, like, you've never really played this way before.
Yeah, well, obviously the multiplayer, which I'm going to return to actually once I finish this interview. I'm straight back in there, mate.
Good.
But that's obviously a very important part of Call of Duty as well. The multiplayer is one of those pillars.
Yeah.
And the added features in that is yet another part of the game that's just gone to the next level.
It really has. It's been day one, 3 years ago, focused on really preserving what's great about Call of Duty, but making some pretty fundamental changes, and you're going to see that. I mean, we talk about bringing loot to Call of Duty as a reward-based system. It's a massive system with more weapons and character gear and reinforcements than you've ever had before. And the virtual lobby, which you saw, which is this ability to really, for the first time ever, create your digital avatar in-game with all these great rewards and virtual firing range and new game modes, new weapon classes like directed energy and the heavy weapons class and customizable score streaks and map-based score streaks. I mean, it goes on and on. I mean, this really, Stephen, this is big, and you know, it's because we heard fans loud and clear coming out of MW3 that, you know, it was time for some pretty radical change.
You mentioned the fans, so you do take notice of what the fans say. Obviously, they're the core reason why you do this. So
absolutely,
what the feedback that they provide you, obviously, you take notice of.
Yeah, we really do. I mean, best in class fans. I mean, biggest fan community in entertainment. You know, 100 million people have played this franchise, and really, you have to listen. You have to listen to what you do well and continue to do that well, and you have to listen where there's opportunities for improvement. And I think, you know, we were really proud of what we did in MW3. You know, we are the co-developers of that game, Action Game of the Year. You know, that was a good game. But coming out of that in 2011, it was clear that fans were demanding, you know, a new era, some change, like you said, like a reinvention of what Call of Duty could mean. And so, you know, we hold our fans really core to our decision-making. We listen, we engage, we want to do better. And, you know, I think you'll see a lot of that in November, and we'll continue to listen, like through the season and coming through the next year as we continue to improve and just try to do everything we can to make it something that fans really love.
Absolutely. Well, Michael, thank you very much. Congratulations on a great game.
Thank you so much.
Mate, I'm going to get back in
get
there.
Get back in there, man.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thank you for the time.
Tech Guide. Now, answering all your tech questions, the Tech Guide Help Desk.
Okay, the Tech Guide Help Desk is about a topic that may be of concern to some people. It's about your smartphone and how it can actually be tracking you wherever you go. Now, before you hit the panic button and worry that other people are going to get this information, that's really not the case. Unless your phone falls in the wrong hands, unless there's no passcode, if someone can get into your phone, that is the only way they'll be able to find out the information that's being collected. There's a lot of location services on every phone, mainly the iPhone. Of course, Android has some other location services in each sort of app, so it's not limited just to iPhone. But we're going to use iPhone as the example here because we had a look in the settings and found some surprising results. The level of detail that the iPhone is able to track your movements, not only the suburb but also the precise address, how long you've been there, how many times you've visited, all in the last period, can be a little confronting when people find this for the first time. It can actually put on a map all the locations you've been to, when you were there, how long you were there, how often you were there. And of course, it's all to help all your apps work a little better in the background. Now, this is used for your benefit. As I said, no one can get this information. No one can access this information. It's all purely for you. In fact, every app that does require location services to be used asks permission at the start. So if you don't want to be tracked by certain apps, hit cancel, hit no, whatever the option is there. But the location services are there so that it can help you with things like geotagging your photographs, finding your location for if you want to share things on social media, if you require some kind of mapping help, if you want to find out how long it's going to take you to get from where you are to your destination, little things like that where your location can help benefit the app, can help the app provide you even more information in return. So it's aware of where you are and who's near you and things like that. But it is quite easy to turn it off. If you're uncomfortable with this, if you don't want this to be happening, then you can do a couple of things. You can A, refuse to have your location service. So if you install a new app, for example, it asks for if you want location services, you can say no. But you can also go into the settings and turn all location services off, either at the top level or by individual apps. There's a whole list in the Apple, the iPhone settings that lets you see what apps are using your location. But there is another area called frequent locations, and this was kind of the amazing part of this, where that actually listed the suburbs and places where you'd visited in the last couple of weeks. So it is something. If that's something you don't want to do, of course you can turn that feature off as well. But as I said, nothing is shared, nothing leaves your phone. It's purely to help you. I did an interesting segment about this very subject on Studio 10. I'll put that up on my Tech Guide Facebook page if you want to actually view this segment. It was quite a fun segment and an informative segment. We try to make it fun and informative. One of the co-hosts, Andrew Datto, suggested, he says, well, really, this is you stalking yourself. And I think that's a really good way of putting it. No one else is stalking you. Your phone is doing this just for your benefit and your benefit alone. But if you don't want to have it, if you don't like it, you can turn it off. You're listening to Tech Guide. And that's our show for this week. Everything we've spoken about on the show can be seen at techguide.com.au. And if you want to get in touch, we'd love to hear from you. Either go to info@techguide.com.au or hit us up at the forum. Place your question in the forum and we'll get myself or our many readers to help you with the answers. Special thanks too to our sponsors Netgear, the brand you can trust for all your Wi-Fi needs. If you want to stay connected, the answer is Netgear. Thanks for listening. It's been a great weekend. South Sydney, 2014 premiers in the NRL. It's been great having you with us. We look forward to you joining us again next week. So until then, stay safe and stay connected.